Blog Talk Radio.
We come to you each Monday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our regular hosts are Steve Thompson, Margaret Bars, Howard Mucci, George Jen, Jim Graybill, Neil Holland, Chuck Albright, and me, Jim Hart. Our hosts, if you have followed our show, are scattered from South Florida, North Carolina, Kentucky, New York, and where I live in Martha's Vineyard, a beautiful island up near Massachusetts. A very busy New England island, especially when a sitting president chooses to vacation here at this time of year. Now, let's tell you, our listeners who might want to call in, just how to get about it. First, you need to call us at one of these two numbers, 1-213-816-1611, or toll free at 1-877-572-1861. When you hear the live conversation from our host, then be sure to press number 1 on your phone keypad to connect live with us. Otherwise, you'll just be listening into the show over your telephone. It's easier to just listen by going to our website at www.blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie. That's CAPTEDDIE. Or you can go to the EAL Radio Show website at www.EALRadioshow.com and clicking on the radio icon shown on the home page. On the home page, you can scroll down and find our Facebook page where you can also click to listen in. Our website membership remains strong with nearly 750 Eastern Airlines people and friends. There's so much to see and do on the website. Why not join while you're on the site? Now let's talk about tonight's show. Neil, will you tell the folks what we have in store for them tonight?
Thanks, Jim Hart. Great having all of our listeners tune in again tonight for our special show. That is titled, I'll give you the title a little bit later on. But first of all, let's listen to one of our great Eastern commercials.
Of all the ways that we can fly, of all the highways to the sky, of all the wings that greet the sun,
passengers have flown Eastern than any other airline in the free world. If you've helped make us America's favorite way to fly, we thank you. If you haven't flown Eastern recently, give us a try. We'll show you we really do earn our wings every day.
You know, being the engineer of this show, it's great just to listen to the sounds of Eastern music. and the Eastern commercials. But tonight's show is titled To See or Not to See. Flight crews in today's modern high-tech aircraft are qualified to make nearly 0-0 landings. That's like touching down on a runway and seeing one centerline runway light at a time as it disappears quickly beneath the aircraft. In other words, there's hardly any forward visibility. Well, Eastern Flight 727, a Lockheed L-1011 TriStar, was presented a problem with no forward visibility. We hope you enjoy the trip with our host crew tonight. Margaret?
Hi, Tom. Hi, George. Are you guys on Flight 727 with me today?
Hey, Margaret. Yeah, we sure are. Looks like a beautiful day for the trip to San Francisco. And, oh, by the way, Chuck is with us also, and he'll be working the panel. He's out doing the pre-flight right now. Do you have a good cabin crew to work with this evening? Today, rather?
You know me, Tom. I only fly with the best. That's why I was hoping you guys were on the flight. I saw you and George in crew scheduling when I checked in. I remembered you were on the trip last month. So hopefully we can get together in the lounge at the Cranberry and maybe go out to eat together like we did last time.
Count me in, Margaret. Boy, I can't wait for a beer and some of that Tabasco popcorn they serve. I usually have too much of that stuff, though, and have only a small appetite for dinner. I'll make room for dinner, though, since you're managing the back end, Margaret.
Okay, guys, see you on board.
Captain Tom Early and First Officer George Preece picked up their paperwork for Eastern's deluxe flight from New York's Kennedy International Airport to San Francisco International Airport. They will be flying the Lockheed L-1011 aircraft number 333 today. Second Officer Chuck Braxton has completed the outside and inside pre-flight inspection, and the aircraft checks out to be in great airworthy condition for the flight. Chuck?
Hi, Margaret. Good to see you again. Seems like every time I get this trip to San Fran, you're usually working the flight. Hope you have a good group working with you.
Hey, Chuck, it's good to see you again. And yes, I bid San Francisco every month. Fortunately, I'm senior enough to hold it on bid. It's one of our most favorite and popular trips to fly for the New York-based flight attendants. Most of the cabin crew is around my seniority, and we do work great as a team. By the way, I met Captain Early in Flight Ops and George, the first officer.
Yeah, Captain Early, he's the people's choice. I've always tried to bid Tom's trips, especially to San Francisco. It's like a three-day vacation. Got any plans for the layover?
Well, not really. In truth, I've seen all the scenic places and eaten at most of the great restaurants. I've ridden all the cable cars I care to ride. I usually do like, though, to hang around the Cranberry Hotel and meet some of the other Eastern crews out of Miami and Atlanta bases. You know, many of those are my old classmates. It's been great that Tom's the captain. You know, he's such a gentleman. Well, I better get to the briefing. I'll see you on board.
Flight 727's crew has all 270 passengers on board and are about to leave the gate of the JFK, that's John F. Kennedy International Airport. Tom?
Hey, Chuck. Check with Margaret and see if she has everything she needs. They're telling me that all the cargo doors should be closed, and looks like the lights are all out. George, call for pushback clearance. Let's go to California.
Well, Margaret says all the food has been boarded, and she's ready when you are, George.
Kennedy Ground, this is Eastern 727, ready for pushback.
Roger, 727, you're clear to push.
Okay, Tom, we're clear to push.
Okay, Ramp, we're cleared to push, and the brakes are off, so it's 12:50, right on schedule.
The flight crew of the Big Eastern L-1011 TriStar has completed all the checklists and is now awaiting their turn for takeoff on runway 13 right. George.
Great altitude here at flight level 350. Looks like a smooth ride all the way. Unusually clear day, and it looks like our passengers will get their money's worth with the countryside rolling by underneath. Want me to turn them loose, Captain?
Yeah, George, how about doing that? And how about taking over also the travelogue today? I assume you have a Captain's Atlas with you.
Yeah, sure do, Tom. They even let first officers buy them now.
Okay, guys, how about something to drink? I'll go back and see what they're having in the way of first-class meals.
Hey, Chuck, I'll tell you what. I usually go back and take a stroll through the cabin and visit with our guests. How about giving me your drink orders, and I'll let you know what our choices will be with the meals. George, go ahead with your announcement, and I'll answer any questions the passengers might have about our flight today as I take a walk around the block.
Hi, Captain Tom. I see you're going to do a little PR work. I wish more guys would take an interest in the comfort of the passengers. You know, there are many folks on every flight who are apprehensive and tense while in the air. Sometimes you can just tell by the way they sit or even the way they ask questions during the flight. You can't imagine, Captain, the reassurance you give these passengers just by your coming through the cabin.
Margaret, I've done this on most all my flights since I checked out as a captain. I'm going to miss this in a few months when I retire. And by the way, I jotted down George and Chuck's coffee preferences here. And here they are. So now I'll wait until I have my meal whenever you have time to serve us up front. Just take care of our guests first, though.
We're sure going to miss you when you retire, Captain. Honestly, Tom, you don't look 60, if you don't mind my saying so. Sorry to see the good guys go.
Good afternoon, folks. This is First Officer George Price speaking to you from the flight deck. Yes, there are still two of us up here flying the airplane, myself and Chuck Baxton, our second officer. Sometimes it concerns the passengers when they see our captain out and about in the cabin. Captain Early will be walking through the cabin momentarily, chatting with you before Eastern's finest flight attendants prepare your meals, and we're certain you're going to enjoy. We've reached our cruising altitude at 35,000 feet, and as you can see, we found just the right conditions. Smooth air and looking out the window, clear skies all the way to San Fran. So our weather briefing back at Kennedy Dispatch told us that. Right now, we're passing over Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and presently, the weather in San Francisco is clear skies. Temperature right now is 54 degrees. Even though we're still nearly 4 hours out, we don't expect any significant change, with the exception that it'll probably be a few degrees warmer when we get there. We'll give you the latest weather when we get closer in. So sit back, relax, enjoy the great meal and a movie you may want to watch as we continue our journey to the West Coast. It's our pleasure to serve you.
Well, Margaret, what's cooking down in the lower galley? Sure smells good from up here.
Well, Captain, the typical westbound service of filet mignon, chicken cordon bleu, a variety of salads, rolls, and a great selection of desserts. And, of course, wines from Napa Valley Vineyard. Do you want to be served right away as soon as they come up from the lower galley?
No, Margaret, just take care of our guests, and then when you have time, bring up two, but I'll eat last. I'm going through the cabin and try to stay out of your way.
Captain Early goes through the wide-body cabin's two aisle and answers several questions about the L-1011 and the route of the flight. Tom notices a gentleman in aisle seat 6B reading a magazine that causes him to ask, Tom?
Good afternoon, sir. I hope you don't mind me asking about the magazine you're reading, and I have an interest in this area of automation as well.
Certainly not, Captain. My name is Howard Mucci, and I am a robotics engineer from MIT. This magazine I happen to be reading is called Robotics, and that is exactly what it's all about. I'm going to the Bay Area, National Semiconductor, to be more specific, my company has been working with their labs on a new type of circuitry for humanoid robotics. I wish I could tell you more about it, but this is very much in a developmental stage, so we really can't discuss it. Are you also interested in automation?
Well, it's nice to meet you, Mr. Mucci. I got very interested in robotics and automation while checking out on this airplane. You probably know that we have the ability to make an approach in nearly zero-zero weather. I've made several of these, especially in Los Angeles and San Francisco, when the sea fog from the Pacific rolls in and you can hardly see your nose. Of course, on days like today with the weather CAVU, and of course that's pilot weather jargon for ceiling invisibility unlimited, I love to get as much stick time as possible. That is manually flying and landing the airplane the old-fashioned way without the help of the autopilot.
Yes, I'm quite familiar with the new technology employed on airplanes. But as I said, my department is working with humanoid robotics. One day, we will have humanoid robots performing flight attendants' duties, such as serving food and beverages. There will be other areas where they might be useful, such as performing check-in. Of course, I'm going to miss the friendly smile of the flight attendants and the personal warmth that only they can give to passengers. But don't worry, it will be a while before you'll be replaced by a robot, although the autopilot on this aircraft is already a step in that direction.
Oh, no, you don't need to tell me someday I'll be replaced. As a matter of fact, that's going to happen in about 3 months. I'll turn 60 then, and I'm not supposed to be able to fly an airplane safely the day after my 60th birthday. I've got nearly 30,000 hours of flight time, and they tell me I'm not experienced enough to fly passengers any longer. Can you believe that?
Oh, yes, I can believe it. The high-tech companies are always bringing in bright new young engineers and retiring older guys like me. It's just a matter of time when I'll be right up there with you. I'm sure you must have read about the unmanned military aircraft called drones to take the place of fighter pilots. We are really advancing at such a fast pace, it's hard to keep up with the various technologies and what they will really mean to the workforce.
Yes, Mr. Mucci, you're so right. It's scary in a way. Well, it's nice chatting with you, and I better get back to the front end and not interfere with the movie that's about to come on. I hope you enjoy the rest of your flight, sir.
Captain Early goes back up to the flight deck to allow the first and second officers to stretch their legs a bit.
Hello, Margaret. Are you calling to ask if you're ready to eat? The answer is a big yes.
Well, I tell you what, Chuck. You get the movie to play in first class, and I'll feed you.
Sure, Margaret. This should only take a few minutes. You don't know, I used to be a movie projector expert back in my hometown, and when I got the job after school, I could watch all the other students making out while a movie was played. Had lots of gossip to share during the school day.
Oh, Chuck, just come on back here and fix this darn projector. I don't especially care what you did in high school.
Yes, Margaret, I'll be right back to fix your problem. We had a few of these breakdowns recently, and I think I got a permanent fix coming out soon.
Chuck heads back to see if he can make everyone happy and start the movie called Smokey and the Bandit. Meanwhile, Margaret goes to the mid-galley to see when the meals will be sent up from below. As she walks toward the mid-galley, she recognizes a crew member in pass-riding attire, sports jacket and tie. She stops to say hello.
Hey, Jim, pass-riding or deadheading?
Hey, Margaret. I'm using this new pass-ride benefits offered to employees and parents, my mom and dad.
Hello, it's a pleasure meeting you both. I've taken advantage of the parent passes myself, and last year took my family on a trip to L.A. We had a great time. You know, I have a couple of seats available in first class, and Mr. and Mrs. Grayville, I'd love to serve you there, if that's okay with you, Jim.
Margaret, that sounds mighty kind of you. I sit up in first class all the time when I'm flying. That's right. The right seat of the L-1011. I'm sure Mom and Dad will enjoy the food and service received from your first class passenger. At least they won't have to watch Smokey and the Bandit. I see they're running the movies of ordinary people in first class. I've seen it many times. I like Donald Sutherland and Mary Tyler Moore just about every time they step in. Mom and Dad, you're in good hands with Margaret. Enjoy Eastern's first class service.
Meanwhile, back on the flight deck.
Hey, Tom, do you want to eat first? I'll take mine later after you and Chuck have lunch.
No, George, I just told Margaret to bring the first two up for you and Chuck. What the heck was that? That sound, did you hear it, George?
Yeah. Wow, take a look at your window, Tom.
Man, looks like my forward window's cracked. I've lost all forward visibility, the exception of my side window. I was planning on making a landing in San Francisco, but that looks like it's your turn. All is going to be yours, George.
That didn't take long. Just a couple of wraps from my hand, and I got it kick-started. Hey, Tom, look at your forward window. What the heck happened?
Chuck, see if you can find any abnormal procedure for Captain's forward window shattered. I sure don't remember reading anything in the aircraft manual about it. If you can't find anything there, let's go to Miami Tech Service and see if they can shed any light on why it may have happened.
Oh, that's right, Skipper. I'll go to the book.
Hey, George, let's review our options. As I said earlier, you'll be making the landing, and since there's no nose wheel tiller on your side, we'll roll to a full stop on the runway and get a tug to bring us into the gate. I'm not going to inform the passengers at this point, as I don't expect any problems other than taxiing, and we'll explain that to them when we get on the ground and wait for the tug connection.
Well, now we've really got a problem. Mine just shattered, too. We'd better look up Plan B.
Both pilots' forward window panels are now completely without forward visibility, causing all three flight crew members immediate concern. Why has this happened? No migrating birds at this altitude. The window heating system has no indication of a malfunction. Tom makes a quick analysis and formulates a plan. The forward windows have an outer glass pane that protects the nearly 1-inch thick plastic inner pane. This prevents scratching the inner forward panes. At the altitude Flight 107 has been operating, the outside air temperature is approximately 50 degrees below zero, and the windshield heating system protects this glass from becoming extremely brittle. That could be the possible cause of their problem, especially when the aircraft is flying at near the speed of sound, Mach 0.84, speed of sound being Mach 1. Tom.
Hey, guys, I was just explaining to a passenger back in first class that we land this airplane in nearly zero-zero conditions, as you all know, especially in Los Angeles and San Francisco with the sea fog coming in at night. There's no reason to worry when our autoland system is working. Chuck, how about looking up in the maintenance log for any write-ups on the autopilots and the autoland system? I don't want to suddenly discover that we can't do a Cat 3 approach. Also, George, would you get on the horn of the San Francisco approach and see if the Cat 3 runway is sterile and let them know what's happened? We've got plenty of time to plan this out, so I'm still not going to make an announcement to the passengers, not yet at any rate. Chuck, How about seeing if you can get San Francisco on a company frequency and tell them our situation, and also tell them that we're going to need a tug to come out and get us to tow us to the gate.
Okay, Captain. I still haven't found anything in the manual about our situation. I talked with Miami Maintenance, and they said it had to be the windshield heating system. I'll tell the company we'll also need to have glass replaced so they can get the parts necessary for repair. We're scheduled to take this plane back to New York tomorrow. Might be a longer layover than scheduled.
Okay, who's eating? I have a steak and chicken. Who gets what? Hey, is it my imagination, or I really can't see out the main windows?
Hey, Margaret, put both meals on my junior executive desk. We'll sort it out later.
Margaret, to answer your question, it's not your imagination, and we can't see out of them either.
Isn't that going to make it difficult to land the plane?
Well, maybe, but we think it's going to be okay since we have the full auto-land autopilot system working. I'm sure you've been on trips to L.A. and seen how it works. We're going to let George, you know, not our George, but the autopilot George, do his thing. The system usually does a better job than the pilots.
Well, should I tell the other flight attendants? Are you going to speak to the passengers about our emergency?
Well, Margaret, yes and no. Yes, I'll tell the passengers about the situation, but we'll wait until we're in the range of San Francisco. And no point in telling them now when we still have about 2 hours to go. And no to your first question. Don't mention this to the other flight attendants until you hear back from me.
The crew has finished their meals, and they have been handed over to San Francisco Center for their descent. Captain Early briefed his crew as follows.
Hey, guys, and once we touch down, George, remind the tower to notify us of the remaining runway distance in order to stop before the end of the runway. Under normal Category 3B conditions, we would want at least to have the capability of seeing forward once on the ground and see the red runway lights to indicate the end of the runway. Also, we'll be parked on the runway to wait the tug for the rest of our trip. Guys, let me know your thoughts when you can think of anything that we've forgotten. For now, it's onward to San Francisco and an excellent time to make use of the lavatory. George, how about minding the store, if you will, and I'll bring Margaret back up when I return for her briefing. I'll also brief the passengers on our situation. I know one passenger has already been briefed, Mr. Mucci in seat 6B. Hey, Margaret. I'd like for you to take all the precautions for the safety of the other flight attendants and the passengers. There's still plenty of time for you to deal with everything you need to accomplish. And I'll let you know when we're 30 minutes to touchdown. There's no need to frighten the passengers at this point.
Back in the cockpit, the flight is about 1 hour from touchdown and cleared to descend to 25,000 feet. Air traffic control is aware of their problems as flight 107 descends into warmer air while at the same time increasing the indicated airspeed and angle of attack from straight and level flight to descent attitude. They approach flight level 250 when suddenly and without warning, all the cracked glass peeled off both sides of the cockpit windshield, leaving the flight crew with a magnificent view of California. It was almost as if a welcome sign had been put out for them. It was a beautiful sight to behold. They could see, like coming out of a storm into brilliant sunshine.
Thank you.
The remainder of the flight was without concern, without incident, but it was still handled with kid gloves by the San Francisco Tower. The landing was smooth and normal on runway 28 left. The people all walked off commenting that it was such a wonderful flight, but little did they know. George.
Well, Tom, I guess in this case, at least for the passengers, ignorance was bliss.
Well, George, you're right about that. And listen, when we get into the terminal building, and if I don't see Margaret and her crew, tell her thanks for all of her help and also a great job. My son Rich and his family live in San Francisco.
This one I'll put on my hip pocket aircraft manual. Believe me, on the L-1011 aircraft, I got lots of them. It can't be found in the Lockheed aircraft manual.
When the crew arrived back at the airport to originate their flight back to JFK, they were all anxious to see what aircraft they had for their return flight to New York. Sure enough, it was the same one. The mechanics had changed both windshields and had repaired the windshield heat the night before. They were ready to go. This was Eastern Airlines Flight 727, November 9, 1980. Airplane number 333. The story was taken from the article submitted to Repartee by Captain Tom Early. The cast for today's program, narrator was Jim Hart, Captain Tom Early was Steve Thompson, George Holder was George Jen, Chuck Baxton was Chuck Albright, Margaret was Margaret Bars, Mr. Mucci was Howard Mucci. Adaptation to radio drama was handled by Mr. Neil Holland.
Well, thank you very much, host and cast. I think you did a great job. Not so certain how my sound effects were, but at any rate, we had a good time delivering a story that was written by Captain Tom Early and was put in the Repartee magazine back in 2005, I believe it was, and it was a very interesting story. And we've had some discussions about windshield failures, and some of you guys, especially Jim Graybill and Steve Thompson and myself, and I'll leave anybody else out that were flying. George, you may have had some cracked windshields yourself on an occasion on a flight. Have any of you had a cracked windshield?
Yeah, I had one.
I have not had one. Sorry.
Go ahead, Jim Graybill.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. It started up in the left-hand corner, and you could see it working its way all the way down to the bottom right-hand corner. But just two cracks, that's all there was. No big deal.
Yeah. Well, different airplanes had different windshield structures. As far as the 727, the one that I probably had more time on, had three panels or three panes, the outer, middle, and inner pane. And depending upon which pane that you lost in flight, if there was a bird strike, for instance, that shattered the window of the outer pane, then there was a pressure differential, and you had to descend to an altitude that you didn't have to exceed that pressure differential as far as pressurization of the aircraft. But and then I think, Chuck, you probably have more experience as far as maintaining those windows and putting them in. But it seems like in San Francisco, just the layover time of about almost 20 hours, those guys out there were able to take the window and replace the window. Chuck?
Yeah, on the L-1011, I've done a few of them myself in the overhaul section when I work there. But they're quite a work of art, so to speak. First of all, they're quite heavy. They're about 200 pounds. And like you said, they have three panes, so the outer pane is, they call it an acrylic glass. And then, of course, you have the inner pane that has a insulation in it. And it also has like a gold wiring in it for heat, and it's glass filled on the L-1011. Of course, you got the inner pane, just like most of the other aircraft would have. And on the 1011, the outer pane is called a shield, and it's actually designed to crack under certain conditions, and because the pressurization really is on the inner pane glass that you have to worry about. There's different precautions that you have to take, obviously, on different airplanes. That outer pane glass is only about 1/8 of an inch thick. The whole glass section, if you want to look at it, the cross section of it, it's about 2 inches thick for the whole three pane rig there. And it takes two hefty guys. They put these bars on either side of them and then have a little crane in the hangar. And if they don't, then they have to have a man lift, and two big guys, they got to pull them up, and of course there's a rubber ceiling around it and everything else. There's probably about, I would say probably close to 100 bolts that go around and hold it in place, so you have to take care of those bolts and everything. So for the layover they had for two windows, those guys were really hopping. But most of that outer pane is made mostly for running the windshield wipers, you know, so they don't scratch up anything. It's kind of a scratch-proof type stuff. And
Chuck, this is Jim. I have a question.
Sure.
Was the aircraft manufacturer made aware of this type of a problem?
Well, they don't. From what I understand, for the outer pane, they don't consider that a problem. They consider that the pane doing its job. It's designed, since it's only 1/8 of an inch thick as opposed to the other two that make up this 2-inch thick thing, mm-hmm. they can. We've actually gone out there at the terminal and chipped them off, and the plane went somewhere, you know, went to another flight to get it back for rotation. In some cases, if it's obviously the inner portion or the inner pane that's, of course, it's inside the cabin area. That's what's taking the pressurization of the airplane. And there, to my knowledge, there is no limitations as far as you guys being able to fly the airplane or anything. If that is obviously cracked, I believe you have to descend. I think the book said 10,000 to 10,000 feet, and take precautions and stuff, and flying the aircraft and everything. But for those panes, the outer pane to eventually crack off and fly away, it's designed to do that as far as I know. And I looked a little bit more, and the only thing that they said that would actually cause that besides bird strike or something out, you know, like stones or something, is the heat controller. There's a controller that controls the heat in both of the windows could malfunction, because remember, it stayed all cracked until you descended, and then you started to increase the speed and the angle of attack, which means the outer pane started to, I would assume, expand, because it contracts in cold weather and obviously expands in hotter weather. So as you come down, it gets warmer, and that's what cracked it all off. That's just my theory, but I think that something would probably happen to something like that. Some general information here, guys.
Yeah.
The L-1011 started out production in 1972 and continued on until 1984. They produced 190 of them, and they stopped production in 1981. The last U.S. air carrier that had it in service was 2001. Most of them have gone to other airlines now. I don't know of any airline that has them. Maybe Delta might have a few, but I don't think so.
Well, Jim, you had, or Steve or Jim Graybill, I've got a question. Maybe I wasn't listening, but why is windshield heat necessary? Jim or Steve, you guys were in the check department. Why is it necessary to have window heat?
Steve,
okay. I think there are two reasons, but the first main reason is to prevent icing on the windshield. But I think there's another reason that it will maintain a certain, I want to say elasticity. I don't know whether that's a proper word or not, but it makes it also bird resistant if with a, maintaining a certain temperature. Jim?
Yeah, that's pretty much what I have heard, Ellen and Steve. To the windshield heat prevents any kind of fog from the inside, so you can still see through it if depending on the humidity that's in the cabin of the airplane.
You know, I'd always heard about the 4-pound bird. I'd sure like to meet that 4-pound bird. Because a 4-pound bird was shot at windows and also shot into the intake of the jet engines to see how they would handle a 4-pound bird with all of its feathers.
Actually, they were chickens.
Chickens?
That's right. They were chickens, yes.
That's right.
They were chickens. I happen to
female chickens.
Hens.
They did have a problem, though. They had a problem when they forgot to thaw them out before they threw them in.
Back in the 60s when Piedmont was still flying the Martin 404s, there was a Piedmont flight coming into Washington National one afternoon, and one of those seagulls came into that quarter panel on the co-pilot side, came through the entire window, blood and guts and all. And,
that don't sound good.
I think it was a little while before the crew could talk after they got on the ground.
Yeah. Well,
I remember when I was at Pan Am and they asked me to go out and clean the blades on the 707. So I go marching out there with my cleaning truck. And the guy says, "Oh, no, we don't do it that way." I said, "What do you do?" He says, "We're going to start the engine and you're going to shovel walnut shells in it. You haven't heard the racket in all your life." And that's what they did.
Oh,
yeah, I heard that, yeah. The 1011, as you mentioned, I was a stickler for a clean windshield. I mean, I was fanatical about it. But that was the only windshield that I couldn't stand up and reach around and clean the windshield. Of all the airplanes that I ever flew, I could clean the rest of them myself without having to call somebody to clean the windshield.
Yeah.
But I couldn't do it in a 1011.
Didn't that one go all the way down to the floor, didn't it, on both sides, the captain and the first officer?
You can't do that from the hatch at the top.
Yeah.
They have to hold your legs.
That's right. That's right. Exactly.
But not do it in flight either.
No. Well, it lets the rain in. That's one of the problems.
Well,
did you guys hear anything about or see or read anything about this new Boeing 747-8? The freighter on that thing. I was reading some material yesterday, and it's not certified to go over 1 million pounds, but Boeing flew that thing at over 1 million pounds the other day.
Yeah.
That's a new Dash 800s.
Yeah.
They tested that weight, takeoff weight, and did a V1 cut and trying to stop before the end of the runway, which they did, over 1 million pounds.
I don't know what the max gross takeoff weight's going to be, but they said it wasn't 1 million, but I don't know what. How far over 1 million they flew this thing, but they did make a takeoff with it more than 1 million pounds.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you got to look at just the fuel alone is going to get right up there in numbers.
It sure is.
Yeah. Well, back to windows, guys. I had one bird strike, and that was in I had two, but both of them were in general aviation airplanes and not commercial airliners. One strike was when I was flight instructing down in Miami, and we hit a seagull in a Cessna 172. And, of course, the seagull made a beautiful imprint of the entire seagull's body in the leading edge of the wing. And there was a noticeable drag at that point to getting it back to the airport. The second one was on a flight when after Eastern went out of business. I was a chief pilot of a little airline out of Easton, Maryland. And we took a Lance, which was a Cherokee, and it was a six-seater. And we were doing charter work out of Washington National, Baltimore, and Dulles. And it was a beautiful sunny day, flying over the Chesapeake with my one passenger going to Dulles so he could make his connection for a European flight. And he asked the question, "Have you ever hit a bird?" And I said, "No, why?" And all of a sudden, bang, I got a bird right in the middle of the windshield of that that little Cherokee Lance airplane. And I don't know how he missed the prop, but he sure splattered all over the front windshield of that airplane. And we took the feathers and the remainder of that bird all the way to Dulles, which the guy that was operating as the service guy on the ramp wasn't too happy about cleaning off the guts and blood and all that of that bird. But I don't think it was a 4-pounder or either. I would have probably had on that flight a chicken dinner or a bird dinner. But that was kind of unusual when he asked me that question. I think out of the corner of his eye, he must have seen a flock of birds. And all of a sudden, bang. So anyhow, that's my story.
Well, I was flying a 737 for U.S. Air when we ingested a bird into the right engine. And it sure doesn't smell like Colonel Sanders when it goes through with the feathers on it, believe me.
They're losing the airspeed. That's the problem.
What's that?
I said, did you lose any airspeed?
No, actually, it was on takeoff roll just right after V2. And we were taking off in Montreal. I think it was on runway 28. And we were scheduled to go to Philadelphia, but we stopped in Buffalo, which was, you know, right across the border. And the mechanics took the cowling off and cleaned it all out and everything. I mean, you know, shut the AC pack off, but the smell was just unbelievable inside the airplane, you know. And but they cleaned it up, and we were probably only there for about a half hour.
Yeah, we ought to get Sully here and ask him how he feels about birds.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that would be.
You know, I keep thinking about that Sully's incident and what a magnificent job that he did. But then, and I'm not tooting my own horn or anything else, but the decisions that he made, that he had to make, were so simple. It was either land on the Hudson or fly into buildings. And things worked out, and he did a magnificent job landing in that Hudson and a super job, and I'm not taking anything away from the job that he did whatsoever. But his decision process was very simple. Does anybody agree with that?
Oh, yeah.
Flying into buildings would probably ruin your day. So,
well, but if you think about it, it was amazing in that it was the middle of the winter, and it was a day where there was zero wind in New York, which never happens. If there had been any wind at all on the Hudson River, you know, there would have been waves of white caps, and the outcome could have been totally different. So I think someone up there was watching after him that night, you know.
Were they able to save that airplane?
No.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, save part of it because it's here in Charlotte.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this, Steve. I think the fuselage is there in Charlotte, isn't it?
Yes.
And one of the engines. Mm-hmm. It was in my aviation magazine.
I think it would make a pretty good diner, you know, if you towed it out onto the edge of the road somewhere.
You're so right.
As long as you serve chicken.
Sully's Diner. Yeah, we ought to suggest Sully's Diner.
Yeah.
There is a guy that has a Boeing 707 fuselage who made a house out of it.
I've seen that.
I've seen pictures of that, and that is my fantasy. Getting a fuselage with a cockpit and hanging it over one of the cliffs here in the mountains.
Yeah.
And making putting the bar back there and a little dining area. That's my dream.
Steve, you would not want the cockpit of a 727. Why not go for a cockpit of a 1011 or an Electra? Lockheed had
because
the
cockpit of a 727 is a lot better
be
than the others, right?
Yes.
He wouldn't want to get up in the middle of the night and hit his head on something if he wasn't familiar with the cockpit.
Yeah.
There's a lady on some lake somewhere. I think I still have pictures of it. It was in the magazine that she got a 727 fuselage. And they...
You mean that's the way she's built?
All right, guys. Let's keep it clean. Now she had teak all on the inside of that thing, and it was cockpit area was hanging out just a little bit over the edge of a small cliff. Maybe I say cliff is probably 100 feet up off of the water, and the exits over the wings she had doors put in there and a deck. Built on each on the one side anyway, and a beautiful look mahogany deck, and it was drool over that one. Mm.
Yes, I saw that. That and I agree.
I know down in Miami, Pan Am donated a 707 fuselage, and they used it. They sank it as an artificial reef, and they let kids from the local schools and stuff put little projects down there with the sea urchins and all that kind of stuff and milk cartons to see how they flourish in the water. And scuba divers can go down here. It's not very deep. It's about 30 feet deep. That was in the Miami Herald down there.
I've got a question to ask Margaret. What's your impression of tonight's show as far as the coolness of Captain Tom Early and the decision that he made? You know, first of all, I thought he was pretty cool, at least in the story that he sent me that we published in the magazine, in that he thought things out that said, okay, George, you make the landing, and now George doesn't have a window either. Okay, we got another George on board the airplane. The autopilot. So the autopilot's going to make the landing. And it was kind of a cool operation all together with the crew, and I'm sure the senior flight attendant, which was portrayed by you tonight, I wish I had her impression of what went on in the backpack there when she saw that the forward visibility was restricted to 0-0. Margaret?
Well, with all my years of training as a senior flight attendant, I was calm and collect as well, and it was all due to Captain Tom Early, you know. And all joking aside, I'm always in awe of all of the pilots. I've listened to these stories now for over 2 years, and I used to be a white-knuckle flyer. I'm not so sure I am anymore. I think I'm completely at ease. But I think the pilots, all of you, I think it's you have certain personalities, and you know, you're good in times of crises and things like that. So I'm very proud of all of you.
Well,
I have a suggestion, Neil.
Yeah.
Neil.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to put this on the floor for a vote, and I think that Margaret needs to have a pay raise and at least double her pay scale that you're presently paying her. Do all of you other guys agree with that?
Yes.
Hey, amen.
Zero plus.
Sure. Why not?
Zero times zero is still zero, right?
I have a question, though. Once the airplane landed with the autopilot, what kept it on the straight and narrow on the runway since you couldn't see? Well, I guess you could see at the last minute, couldn't you?
Who's going to answer that?
Well, in this scenario, it already cracked off, so he had a regular landing, right?
No. If the scenario was that the landing was made by the Autoland system of the airplane, Jim or Steve or Jim Graybill, let's tell folks what the rest of the rollout is.
Well, you know, I've never tried that in the airplane. I have in the simulator. And you can hardly kick the rudders and make it get off course, Neil.
Yeah, Steve?
And I think it's the same thing in the airplane. It gets its sensing from the localizer, which is so sensitive down at that point.
Exactly.
And it actually steers the nose wheel to keep it. You could probably in the airplane feel it going over the runway centerline lights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I had the pleasure of having my wife in the cockpit on one of my last flights with Eastern on the A300 flying into Los Angeles at night when the sea fog rolled in so thick that we had to do a Category 3B landing. And she was sitting in first class, and I've told this story a couple of times, but I'm getting old, so I don't care really how many times I tell it. But I had the flight attendant to bring her up to the front to show her what I did for a living. And when we made that downy approach into L.A., sea fog was down to 400 RVR, which is 400 RVR traveling at about 150 or 60 miles an hour. That's not much visibility. That's like seeing the end of your dinner table. And you see one light at a time. And so she was actually seeing a complete, full, authorized, sterile runway, sterile airplane, autoland. And that A300 that I was flying that night did a beautiful job of making a full autoland in almost zero visibility.
Mm.
And taxiing was probably the most dangerous part of the whole thing, taxiing to the gate because the fog was so thick in L.A. And perhaps you guys have had a similar experience. But that was a real pleasure to show your wife that, you know, what you did for a living. And she, I don't think she was impressed to this day.
Yes, she didn't know what it took to get to that point. So, yeah.
She remembers all those other flights when she went up there and you had a cup of coffee in your hand.
Yeah, saw the pretty girls serving us.
There.
Like Margaret.
Neil, I tell you a little experience I had with that low visibility. I taxied out in Seattle one night, and of course it wasn't the airplane you handed off, but anyway. we got out to the end of the runway, and visibility went down to, I think, around 200 RVR, and in fact sometimes 00. And you couldn't see your hand outside the window, really. And we sat there for a couple of hours, and we decided, you know, it's not going to get any better. So we had to come back to the gate. Well, I was beginning to wonder how I was going to taxi and find the gate. And the ground control took us out onto the runway, down to the first turnoff with the lights. And when we got off those turnoffs on the lights, we were blind. And ground radar vectored us around on the ground, you know, turn right 10 degrees, turn left, stop, turn, just like you were in the air. And the first thing I saw was that jetway coming up on the side of the airplane. Those guys were good.
Well, like the article said, just remember, there's drones out there.
Well, I hear the champagne music in the background. We hope you enjoyed tonight's show. And we look forward to being with you again next week, same time, same station, on the radio voice of Eastern Airlines, where we bring you our airliners really mechanically safe in today's practice of contract maintenance service? In other words, they're not airline employees working on the airplanes. They're other people. Wait until you hear this one. We wish you a very successful week in whatever you undertake to do. Remember, keep the blue side up. Have safe airspeed and plenty of altitude. From all of us, good night, Eastern family.
Good night, Eastern family.
Good night, Eastern,
good night, Eastern family.
Bye-bye.
Good night, everyone.
And good night.
One of these shows that we have all sorts of mistakes made.
Oh, yeah.
A mistake show. They'd have the toilet flushing. That would be good. And then the door open. Uh-oh. I'm sorry, I got the wrong one. And have a little script, of, like we're doing a real script on this thing. Help! He falls out. No stairs, no stairway, no jetway, nothing. He falls down to the ramp. Yeah, and you could say, isn't it sound, didn't the sounds in the jet airplane really sounds really nice, interior sounds? Then all of a sudden have a propeller airplane, brrr, you know. Yeah, the striptease music.
Oh,
I got to do that. I got to do a show like that. We got to do one. Screw up. Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. Oh, several times. Hey, Neil, you got the wrong sound. Like, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. Margaret, we got to do that. Now, that would be one that when you get up to Kentucky, we do with Paul and them. Oh, that would be a wonderful
show. Yeah,
that would be a great one. That would be a super one.
Yeah, think of something good, though. We can get Paul on there.
Steve, you still there?
Kentucky. I mean, he could, you know, he's the captain.
Yeah.
And he'll talk about the little red Learjet. He's like, we just go up, then we come down.
Yeah.
That's all we do.
Oh, that would be great. That would be a super one.
Whatever you